Views expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of this station, staff, or management. The following pre-recorded program is sponsored by Tabes Tech, LLC. This is Pro Business Colorado with your host, Dave Tabor, on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. This is a show about spirit, the spirit of opportunity created by people who could be successful anywhere and they choose to start and grow their businesses here in Colorado. And it is different in Colorado, whether it's having a business meeting during a bike ride or a special kind of collaboration that goes on here. I get jazzed talking with dynamic people, with interesting businesses, and with subject matter experts who get that Colorado is special. All my guests are people who inspire me, who can inspire you, and offer ideas to help us succeed in business. And today I'll be visiting with my friend Toma Bedoya, founder and head genius of House of Genius?
Chief Disruptor.
Chief Disruptor. And that is a good title for Toma. House of Genius brings together entrepreneurs and a diverse mix of collaborators from the community for an evening of disruptive thinking, supporting input and creating creative new ideas. I'll discuss with Toma just what this organization is all about and how it has sprouted from an innovative concept, really a concept in Boulder, to one that has exploded in just a couple of years based on customer demand. And who doesn't want a company that explodes based on customer demand? So now he's in cities all around the U.S. and around the world, including Amsterdam, Bangalore, Hong Kong, Istanbul, London, Tel Aviv. So we're going to talk with Toma about that in just a moment. Be sure to check out the Pro Business Colorado podcast, today's show, and past shows featuring leaders of great companies like Otterbox, Steel Optics, Full Contact, PharmaJet, American Furniture Warehouse. They'll all be available on Monday. You can go to my website to link to those, proco360.com. Again, that's proco360.com. So let's jump right in. It's time to welcome Toma Bedoya, House of Genius. Thanks for being here with me again.
Pleasure to be here.
And we've done this before.
Yeah.
But today I wanted to talk more about, I mean, some time has gone by, a number of months have gone by since we've been together, and things have really changed at House of Genius.
They sure have. You know, since last we spoke, we've done a couple of interesting things. One of them was we facilitated events for Clinton Global and the final Clinton Global initiative, which was really interesting. And 1 week before we launched into that, given the sort of political climate, Bill Clinton actually announced that this was going to be the last one. And so that was really sort of new for us because we had sort of jumped into that relationship.
Yeah.
We're diving in to help not just businesses, but heads of state who are looking to help things just like the refugee crisis. So,
well, that's a good illustration of the weight that House of Genius has earned early in its life. Back up, though, let's talk about what is House of Genius. And let's start with that and maybe how it originated. And then we'll dive back in further about what you're doing.
Sure. So, you know, the original thrust was this idea that networking events were a little broken. And by broken, that you get so many valuable, well-educated, well-intended people in the same room. I used to be the CTO for Jason's Deli, and I would go to CTO conferences. And these events, you know, you get all these people in, there's a lot of networking time, you exchange business cards, but the value created didn't really seem like it was commensurate with the amount of people who were there. And so what I started thinking was that networking events themselves were broken, and especially when you start networking as an entrepreneur. And so getting into events, really getting out there, not even being shy, but, you know, you get enough business cards, and after a while, you realize that you're not getting the return on the investment for the time.
Yeah.
And so how could you make a networking event more meaningful? And the first thought was, how could you get everyone who shows up actually involved and engaged? And so that was sort of the original thrust. And then, you know, once you start answering that question, what do you get them to engage on? It's let's seed a conversation. And, you know, entrepreneurs are all working on sort of that next hurdle. And if you could get an entrepreneur or a small business to share what keeps them up at night and move away from that sort of pitch event and then get everybody in the room to sort of attack the problem.
Well, you know, I'm going to have you continue that in a moment. The couple of things you've already identified as challenges around networking kinds of thing is one, people who you really, whose minds you really want to engage don't often always go. And when they go to those kinds of just an open networking thing, they don't know who to talk to and how. And so creating an environment that, I mean, you really, when you create these, you're curating who's in the room, right? Do you want to talk about that a little bit and the value of curating?
Yeah, there's something that is, to kind of build on your point, there's a layer to networking events where it's everyone showing up on a shared interest, right? A CTO conference is all CTOs. And are you really getting people who think about problems in a different way than the way a CTO would? And so, you know, it feels comfortable to be in a room full of people who share a job title or in their industry.
Yep.
But if you sit and you talk and everyone is, you know, engaged, but coming from a different perspective and point of view, that really starts to become fascinating. And so what we do is we curate our events for getting thought leaders from different siloed industries of a community, and we bring them together and we allow them to all sort of engage equally in a conversation around a problem, a challenge, a hurdle. And when you bring in so many different perspectives, what that does is it sort of provokes and gets that, you know, cliche out of the box thinking in play.
So what's a room look like? Let's paint that picture of what this House of Genius room, if somebody were to walk in and watch, what would it look like?
Sure. It could be anywhere from sort of, you know, on the low end, 12 to 14, but on the high end, 22 to 24 people around a large table. And what no one knows in the room is that no two people share a background or industry. The room is curated for diversity. And we'll have a few people in the room who are domain experts for the problems that are going to be presented. So they kind of keep us all on the rails. But the rest of the room is from a completely different thought leadership industry that might seem unrelated on the surface, but allows people to look at problems in a sort of a new and unique way to bring their gifts to sort of apply.
Yeah. Now you've told me a story about an example where somebody was sort of, the rest of the room was sort of in awe of this guy. And it turned out that he had a completely unrelated profession at the end, right? I mean, you must have lots of, but can you give an example of something like that?
Oh, there's tons of good examples there. Yeah. You know, the one that I love to go back to is there was a marketing question. How could you really get this message out and could you get it to resonate with people? And a gentleman gave some feedback and some thoughts that just had everyone in the room nodding their head like, yeah, you should do that. That's amazing. Yeah. And you just assumed that this guy was, you know, somebody from Mad Men and was in advertising, was in marketing. And it turned out that the gentleman was in criminal profiling, right, and doing consulting on that. And so you realize there was a psychology element to it that made sense, but you never would have sought this person out to solve this problem. And it turned out he had the really unique, fresh thinking and perspective that wasn't bound or locked in by the rules of marketing or the formulas of how many eyeballs and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really about getting to the heart of the problem.
And that's really the sort of the novel approach. Novel may not be the right word. I'm going to use it now and later we'll clarify. But the novel approach around, you know, pulling people together that have disparate views that come from different places, right? I mean, that's what this is all about.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it turns out that so few of us actually get to work in the areas of our true genius or our true passion. A lot of us, you know, we make our way in the world and we get in, you know, we get locked into careers that really aren't in alignment with what we're really good at.
I'm going to cut you off there because we're taking a break on Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. We'll come back with Toma Bedoya.
News Talk 710 KNUS.
Hey, Craig Silverman here for William Crowe Jewelry. This Valentine's Day, give a gift from William Crowe. It will be treasured decades after a box of chocolates has been devoured. Flowers are okay, but they too will fade in time. Precious jewelry is an investment which lasts a lifetime. This Valentine's Day, think inside the box, but just make sure the box has William Crowe on it. Now, I know men are sometimes nervous buying jewelry. No need to be at William Crowe. It is a family atmosphere, a really smart and friendly family. The sales professionals do not work on a commission. You can spend under $100 or several thousand. At William Crowe, you can be confident that no matter what the budget, you will get top value for your money, and she'll receive a gift that she will cherish and enjoy for years to come. William Crowe's been in Denver for nearly a century with a stellar reputation for integrity. Located in downtown Denver at 16th and Champa, take the light rail or utilize the free validated parking. Find them online at williamcrowe.com. This Valentine's Day, give a gift from William Crowe Jewelry, making Denver sparkle since 1924.
This is a life-changing message for anyone with sleep apnea who is on the go and tired of dragging around a big, bulky home CPAP device. Now there's finally a portable device that's as small as a soda can and weighs less than a pound. You can even add a battery that's as tiny as a deck of cards. It's the Transcend Mini CPAP. And if you're one of the first 100 callers, you can try Transcend risk-free for 10 days. So call now. 1-800-400-9121. Transcend is the world's first portable mini CPAP device. It gives you the freedom to sleep in total comfort anywhere you are. Our smallest and most advanced portable design ever, Transcend is so small and so light, you can fit it in your briefcase or purse to use anywhere you go. It's FAA compliant too, so you can even sleep comfortably while flying. To guarantee your 10-day in-home trial, you must be one of the first 100 callers to call minicpap.com now. 1-800-400-9121. Again, that's 1-800-400-9121.
We now return to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. I'm currently visiting with Toma Bedoya, who's the founder and the chief disruption officer at House of Genius. House of Genius brings together entrepreneurs with a diverse mix of backgrounds, and they collaborate and from all kinds of different we'll keep talking about the kinds of people that you pull together in a room to create disruptive thinking, to gain supportive input and garner fresh creative ideas. So, hey, I want to thank our sponsors, though, as we continue into this show, Community Banks of Colorado, MicroStar Keg Logistics, and American Furniture Warehouse. We're really appreciative of having those three great Colorado companies supporting this show and the Colorado entrepreneurial community. Hey, I want to let you know, too, next week, I've got John Levesay, CEO of Craftsy, coming on the show to join me. Craftsy is, Toma's nodding, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Craftsy is a Colorado-based company helping people learn online how to do various hobbies, things like quilting, cake making, decorating, and sewing, all kinds of things like that. You'd think, wow, how can a company actually make money online? Craftsy's figured out how to do it. In fact, they've raised $106 million in venture funding to help them pursue these tremendous endeavors that they've got going on. So we'll be speaking next week with John Levesay, CEO of Craftsy. Today, I want to continue my conversation with Toma Bedoya of House of Genius. And we, in the last segment, we kind of painted the picture of what a House of Genius event is. This notion of pulling together people, curating, though, carefully pulling together people of all different backgrounds. And the idea is that, right, that and I've been to one. It was really a remarkable experience. But you've got entrepreneurs at the head presenting to a group of people they don't know, right, Toma? They don't have their backgrounds.
Yeah, we didn't really bring up that part that there's this anonymity that's both imposed, first names only. You can't talk about your background. Can't qualify or disqualify yourself as you give feedback.
So it's kind of weird. I mean, you walk in. This is the most unusual experience. You walk into a room. You're allowed to give your first name. And you can talk about personal things before the evening starts, like, you know, what your hobbies are. You can't say anything, right?
No, and most people talk about their kids or the weather, or some people just freeze. They don't know what to say.
It's a very
bizarre. If they can't
talk
about their work or their background.
Yeah, but, you know, again, to your point, it's a common experience. And so everybody feels awkward, and everybody feels sort of I guess, engaged awkwardly with one another. It's a funny thing.
It's true. But the moment you started, because within 5 minutes of our events beginning, you're diving in to a mm-hmm. problem and everyone's engaged. And after you get into those sort of first thoughts and feedback, everybody sort of gets it. They're like, oh, okay. Anything goes here. This is great.
So the idea is that you don't know you're sitting next to or sitting across from somebody who's got an idea. She could be a pastor or she could be a brain surgeon. You just don't know, right? And they're there to provide ideas to the presenting entrepreneur who's got a challenge, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What kind of challenges are you bringing to the group?
Some of them are traditional, like how do we get this to scale, or, you know, these messages aren't really resonating with our audience, or, you know, is this the right problem that we're solving? Are we going after the right customer base? From a business perspective, sometimes they can be pretty traditional. If the ideas are a little more disruptive and innovative, then sometimes, the questions can get into, is this a business? Is this viable? And, you know, do we have to run into the dead end head first, or, you know, to run out of funding before we recognize that this doesn't need to go any further? And these conversations and collaborations are remarkable at getting at that. Like, this business problem is so underwhelming. This isn't a company. Stop now. Right. And so, the idea is that all of the risk and of economic growth and entrepreneurship can't fall on just the entrepreneurs and the investors with their time and their dollars. It's sort of on all of us. We all have a horse in that race. If the entrepreneurs succeed.
Well, speaking about sort of underwhelming or overwhelming, House of Genius sort of exploded. And it just sort of, now you're in how many cities? 27 cities?
Yeah, we're in 36 cities around the world. We're in 11 countries. And we have demand from over 150 cities more to expand. And so we're now basically, you know, pursuing our own growth capital, and we're going after that sort of scale so that we can start creating a global net that helps make entrepreneurship a bit more aware as a mm-hmm. collective around the world.
Well, this is kind of one of these holy grail deals. Everybody wishes that they could this didn't start out when you started it. It started as a notion, didn't it?
Yeah, it was sort of a side project. It was kind of like, hey, networking events are broken. Well, oh yeah, Toma, what would you do? And, you know, so there was a little bit of a dare element to it, but it worked so well in Boulder that, you know, I was like, well, maybe it's just Boulder. So then we mm-hmm. tried it in Austin, And I worked with the CIO from Jason's Deli, who had been my cohort there.
Yeah.
And it really took off there. And so we had a friend that was moving to Singapore. And she asked, she's named Sue Heilbronner, and she's one of the founders of Mergelane that works in, you know, in Boulder with female entrepreneurs now. And she took it with her to Singapore, and it worked well there. And then we brought it back to Denver. Denver was actually our fourth city. And before you knew it, it started to follow me along my travels as I was CEO of Travel Shark and Aprobatics. And as I was working on these problems and traveling the world, House of Genius just kept coming up. And people were like, that sounds great. Could I do that here? And it stuck.
That's, I mean, everyone wishes they would start something as a whim and have it explode, right? I mean, is there, when you look back, was there, did you see this as something that was going to, or it sounds like you didn't. You just were doing something.
No, you know, it turns out that I thought it was just networking that was broken, but I think it went a little deeper. I think communities want to engage. I think people want to go to events. They want to engage. They want to participate. And far too often we go to large events, and unless we know a lot of people there, we don't necessarily feel like we get to be heard, that we get to, you know, add value.
You know, there's a sort of a, to me, there's a human element that you bring to, through House of Genius, that everywhere else in life, we just don't want to deal with it. We don't want necessarily to meet new people from different backgrounds, because it may not prove fruitful. It may not be a good use of time. In my world, people have more money than they have time even. And so, you know, it's this whole thing, like, do I really want to just go do something that could be useless as far as my time? You know, and I think you take that question out of the equation, that you make meeting new people from different backgrounds safe. And right,
safe is exactly what I was about to say. We take the threat out of it. You know, we show up in the world, and in most cases, you know, hi, my name is, what do you do, is the next question.
Right.
We, you know, we lead with our credentials, all of these things that we use to sort of tag ourselves as being relevant or why I'm important and you shouldn't dismiss me. Here's why, you know, you should, you know, maybe not discount anything I'm about to say. But if everyone is removed from that, then it turns out we're amazing at collaborating and sharing ideas, and we kind of get back to our younger, more innocent selves.
Ah, well, and you purposely put people in a room. You purposely put a plumber or a nurse or a teacher or a priest in a room with entrepreneurs who would never really listen to those people, the opinions, right? I mean,
no, absolutely. And a lot of times they're the ones who are providing the spark that just opens up everyone else's mind. You know, we did an event in Washington, D.C., and there were a lot of people around the room from all of the countries in the Middle East. And a pastor, preacher, used the word jihad in his feedback, to which he was like, whoa. Ah. But he brought it back, and everyone in the room suddenly felt safe, and it opened up the room for people to share freely, like to share, to not be worried about, I'm sitting next to my boss in a conference room, I don't want to say too much.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But you actually don't set up your structure that way. You've told me that companies have, the leader of a company has come to one of your House of Genius events, loved it, and said, can you do this for my company? And it doesn't work.
Now, it depends. In larger organizations, it can. Right?
If there's anonymity, kind of.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about like a ConocoPhillips or maybe an Arrow Electronics would be a good example, but a company where you don't know everyone, right? You only know people in your department or maybe people in your office, your floor, your branch. And for that type of organization, it can work, and it can work even better if we do it for a corporation and maybe we bring in a few really brilliant minds from outside of the organization, right? And, you know, if you think about it, corporations are always boxed into themselves.
Yeah, they are.
Innovation is a challenge for every business because you get locked into your processes. It's what you're supposed to do.
You know, one of the things that struck me when I experienced the House of Genius is that there were some very, very senior leaders there. And my son, you were gracious enough to have him there. He just graduated from college. And, of course, no one knew who was who. But I think sometimes, based on someone's age or the way they look, opinions. In fact, I want to play a clip because I want your take on it. This is Simon Sinek talking about millennials. And I want to, when we come, it's 97. Go ahead and play that, please, Timothy.
So you take this group of people, and they graduate school, and they get a job, and they're thrust into the real world. And in an instant, they find out they're not special. Their moms can't get them a promotion. That you get nothing for coming in last. And by the way, you can't just have it because you want it, right? And in an instant, their entire self-image is shattered. And so you have an entire generation that's growing up with lower self-esteem than previous generations.
Okay, so this is what, I mean, you throw that into your mix, mm-hmm. right? If, I mean, your whole idea is getting people with different opinions, different ages, different, and where does something like that fit into the way somebody like a CEO of a big company thinks about who's in the room? You know, and how do you manage
that? No, it's a great, I love that clip. I've actually seen that whole video.
Yeah.
You know, what? There's an interesting take. You have the perspective of an older generation who, you know, we were really sort of brought in that assembly line industrial mindset of, you know, you climb the ladder and that's how you gain recognition and the right to be able to speak in a room. Now you have a millennial generation that comes in who have fresh ideas. They grew up with technology and they're quick thinkers. They're very resourceful.
Yep.
But now they're in an environment where, you know, suddenly they're not allowed to share freely, which their entire existence has been about sharing.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're told that, you know, you got to pay your time, you got to pay your dues. And it's even harder to get a job. And the idea that, like, am I going to have to spend 5, 10, the notion of 10 years into something, it just doesn't register or compute. And you have, you know, a CEO who really just wants to hear fresh thinking, who wants to hear these ideas and wants things to flow freely. And so I actually think there's a marriage waiting to be made there.
I would think so, because during the normal course of a day, a CEO may say that she or he is interested in fresh ideas and all that. But, you know, they may not. I mean, they're kind of busy. And so putting them into a scenario where they've signed up to hear ideas or to participate in a process like this, to me, that's kind of a great opportunity.
No, absolutely. And, you know, to the event that you attended in, we had a CEO of an airline to my right. And, you know, you could argue that he was having more fun than your son.
Yeah.
He was really enjoying being able to participate in ideas. And even from a CEO's perspective, you know, you always have to be politically correct. You always have to take things, you know, and you always have to kind of play by the rules. And we really allow, we create a freedom for you to embrace that anonymity and that humanity. All of us, we're amazing when we can share.
To that point, I've got a little comment from Seth Godin, and he says the main topic that's in everybody's mind, it's almost never the one that's worth talking about. The urgency of the day, today's celebrity crisis, the things of the moment, that's what the media wants to talk about. That's, you know, what creates urgency, but that's not what's important. And I think as I see what you do and what you unearth through this experience, that you kind of get past the noise.
Yeah, it really is about signal. We're really good at honing in on what's the consensus and what's the conflict around, you know, a problem. And a problem is really just an opportunity. And when you create a freedom that nobody's responsible, accountable, going to lose their job or going to get in trouble, it's just really a meritocracy about ideas to come at the problem. There's a freedom. And that freedom is something that really unlocks all of us.
You know, when we come back, and we've got another minute or so in this segment, but when we come back, Toma, I want to talk about, is there a way to bring that sense of freedom and openness and dialogue? Is there a way to bring it into life without being part of a house of genius? I want you to think about that as we go to break.
That's a great question.
And as we do, though, I want to mention again that next week coming up on the show, John Levesay, CEO of Craftsy. Craftsy is a Colorado-based company that helps people learn online how to do various hobbies, things like quilting, cake making, and decorating. We're going to discuss how they've built this elusive online business based on three mottos: always making something, handmade means more, and never not learning. So I hope you'll join me on Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor next week. And go to the website proco360.com to sign up for news of upcoming guests. We'll be back after this.
CBS News Update. Nerves are rattling in Asia and around the world after North Korea launches a ballistic missile in a test. It's not supposed to do that under UN resolutions. North Korean expert Andrea Berger says it was a bold statement.
North Korea is very clearly sending a message to Trump that its missile developments are not up for negotiation and are certainly not going to be determined by the tweets of a United States president.
Not that they haven't done this before, she says.
This is not an entirely new departure for North Korea. Its political significance is potentially greater than its technical one.
This kind of missile could not hit the United States, but CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland says neighbors should be concerned.
The range span of the missiles that it has and the belief that they either have or shortly have a nuclear warhead that could mount on one of those missiles can certainly threaten major American allies, Koreans, as well as the Japanese.
CBS News Update, I'm Mike Sugarman.
Hi, it's Peter Boyles. Have a great weekend. Monday morning, 5 a.m., first place to talk in the city, 710 KNUS. How deep is the influence of Saudi Arabia, the money in Colorado, through politicians, law firms, and others? We're going to take a hard look at what the Saudis are doing and who they're using. I'll see you Monday morning, 710 KNUS.
Peter Boyles, weekdays from 5 to 9 on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Gosh, it's hot in here. Did that toaster catch on fire?
It wasn't that. You choked on that bite of burnt bacon.
Why is everything all red? The heat is unbearable. Where am I?
Excuse me, Your Dishonor. May I step in on behalf of my client?
Mr. Silverman, proceed. Tell me one redeeming good thing your client did.
He was a faithful listener to my radio show.
Not good enough.
He had decency and compassion for his family. He did end-of-life planning with Michael Bailey.
The Michael Bailey? That is kind to your loved ones. That is smart. And way too decent for this place. Your client can go.
And what about me, Your Despicableness?
Why should I?
Michael Bailey is my lawyer, too.
Go on, then. Get out of here.
Now, part of that was serious, and part of that was fictional. But you will die someday, and if you don't make a legal plan, the government will make one for you. Call my lawyer, Michael Bailey. His rates are reasonable, and he can meet with you and your spouse wherever you want and on weekends and evenings. 720-394-6887 or online at MB LawLLC.com.
And now I will tell you about something medically that works. How was that for an intro? I'm about to say it because I never really thought I would. I took Relief Factor as the first pain reliever I would ever endorse because of how it worked for my wife and my colleague Hugh Hewitt. Well, now I can tell you that this thing is just short of some sort of miracle. See, I had an ongoing pain, not terrible, just a pain, and I simply assumed I would just live with it. Then I got some knee pain as a result of some of my workouts, so I decided I would take it for the knee pain, and now both are gone. That's why I think of this as sort of a miracle drug. ReliefFactor.com. All I ask is that you visit their website, and then you decide whether or not you try it out. Clearly, it can't help everybody. There is no such thing. But it certainly helps a lot of people, and now I can include me as one of them. So go to ReliefFactor.com.
Guys, Valentine's Day is next week. Luckily, Pro Flowers is offering an unbelievable deal. 1 dozen red roses plus a free glass vase and chocolates for $29.99 plus shipping and handling. Order now from Pro Flowers. You pick the delivery date and it's guaranteed. But hurry, this incredible deal expires this weekend. The only way to get this amazing deal is to visit ProFlowers.com. Click on the blue microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code 6363. That's ProFlowers.com. Secret code 6363.
Now, back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. And today I'm visiting with Toma Bedoya, who's the founder and chief disruption officer of House of Genius. I know that sounds kind of novel, kind of, but anyway, you're really getting into sort of this whole human way of interacting and creating this really a constructive framework for new ideas. And we're going to talk more about that in just a moment. I want to let you know, I should give you a bit of background about it. I'm going to do that about House of Genius, but I want to thank our sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado, American Furniture Warehouse, and MicroStar Keg Logistics. You know, all three of these companies are like, what do they have in common? And it's that they love and support the Colorado entrepreneurial community. So thanks to those great leaders of those companies. Again, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and American Furniture Warehouse. I appreciate their support for this show. And getting back with Toma Bedoya, House of Genius, I mean, basically, you sprouted this up from just this kind of an idea to maybe improve networking in Boulder, and the concept exploded over just how long have you been at this?
So end of 2009 is when we did our first
really?
Event.
All right. So it's been several years, 7 years maybe.
The last three or four is the ones that have been a little more serious.
Explosive ones, yeah. And I mean, now you're in 36 cities. You're across the U.S., many major cities in the U.S., Manhattan, others. But here, of course, Denver, Boulder, awesome. But now you're all over the world. Mm-hmm. Amsterdam, Bangalore, Hong Kong, Istanbul, London. Have you been to all these?
Yeah. Oh, I've been to... I went to the inaugural session of every event up until the last 18 months. Hmm. And so I have not yet been to Bangalore, Sao Paulo, Let's see, I haven't been to Tel Aviv. So there's a handful I haven't been to yet, but I have every intention of getting there.
Wow. And as the founder, what a fun deal. You get to travel around the world as your business, you know, to meet people all over the world.
It's been fun, no doubt. Yeah, and yeah. I get to meet people who their heart's in the right place. You know, they're sort of fighting the good fight in their own communities on behalf of entrepreneurship and trying to make those ecosystems much more vibrant and much more effective.
Yeah. And if you've just joined me during this show, you know, another, I guess, a reminder of what House of Genius is. I mean, you're pulling together disparate people, all different backgrounds, into a room, 20 people roughly. And entrepreneurs are pitching to them. Well, not just really pitching. They're really presenting problems, hurdles, barriers.
Under the hood.
Yeah. And the people in this room all participate equally from whatever their background is. No one knows each other's backgrounds and coming up with creative approaches to solving problems. Right?
Absolutely. And most people who come to our events are nominated from someone who's been to an event before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll be like, look, you got to go check this out. And something that happens that we never really ask people to do, but when they nominate for people in their network, they don't give it away. They don't say like, hey, you're going to go to this event and you can only use your first name. And, you know, they basically just tell people to honor the format and to recognize that your credentials don't matter. You know, if you're in a room full of people who are just there to give.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fun part is the end. In a way. I mean, you call it the reveal, right? Mm-hmm. To explain what that is.
Absolutely. So after we've, you know, sort of sunk our teeth and our collective minds into three different challenges being faced by small businesses or entrepreneurs, we go around the room and everybody gets to sort of what we call take off the mask. And you can share your title, your background, anything about, you know, your history that you might want. And as you go around, you think you know, or you might have someone pegged. And then they share that, you know, they're a professor at the local university and you're just like, whoa. Or I was at an event where, you know, we were with one of the founders of the documentaries of National Geographic. You know, I was sure that this guy was a professor. And
What are some of the unusual backgrounds that have been curated into your groups you would have thought, how did this happen?
Well, you know, pastors are a good one. You brought that up earlier. You know, we get a lot of people who are, sort of tinkerers of their own making, if you will. Somebody who was really into old trains and, you know, had built their own museum, around this. We've had people who they do sign language, or they do websites, or, we had a gentleman who teaches programming to the blind, and that was fascinating. And so what happens is that people go really deep in their own fields and they create problem-solving tools that can be applied to any problem.
But they don't share their background as they're engaging in the program, not till the end, right?
Not till the end, and you're not allowed to. We have some really talented moderators for every event. We have a host and a moderator, and the moderator will make sure. And eventually the room moderates itself. If somebody's like, well, you know, in my experience, and people are like, don't qualify yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't want to know. Like, they don't want to lose that innocence of the conversation.
Well, if you've just joined me, I'm speaking with Toma Bedoya of House of Genius, and this is a group that brings together entrepreneurs and a diverse mix of collaborators from the community for an evening of disruptive thinking. And my question before we went to the last break, Toma, was, is it possible to bring some of, you know, you go to a House of Genius, you're inspired by the idea of being open and collaborative. Can you take that out into the world, or does it really need to be in a structured, safe, rule-based environment?
So the short answer is I hope so. The longer answer is, and coincidentally, here in Denver, we're getting a chance to sort of experiment with that. The World Trade Center project that I believe you might be familiar with here in Denver, a lot of money going into that. The work of groups like Formative and World Trade in partnership with House of Genius, we're actually going to try to create spaces where collaboration is expected, that maybe
physical
the ground,
spaces.
Yeah, that the ground floors of new buildings or these areas are open to conversation and collaboration, that we can get small businesses and ecosystems in partnership with corporations that are in these spaces to engage freely, that there's an expectation, sort of a cultural opportunity.
Well, I gotta push back on that because you can have, I mean, in our building, we've got a beautiful little lounge on one of the floors and no one's ever in it. People don't just go there to engage with strangers and talk about issues, right? So how do you make that happen?
Well, you know, one of the examples that we're looking at is could you create sort of a fishbowl area around where people have patios for beers and coffee shops and retail, and that you could be sitting there having lunch and, you know, or drinking a beer. You and I could be sitting there drinking a beer, and we could be watching an innovator or a small business flying a drone around and giving a demonstration of what it is that they're working on. And perhaps there's an engineer that's here having lunch, and they're having a challenge and could be engaged.
So, what you're saying is you create a space with an activity that draws people in, that
absolutely,
you know, that would stimulate engagement, as opposed to just like, here's a place you can go and sit.
Yeah, so, and I think one of the keys is, you know, a lot of innovators and co-working spaces, what have you, they're sort of behind these walled gardens. What if we turn that around, and what if we allow innovation to be more exposed to the public? What if you have millions of people seeing the innovative efforts, as opposed to this sort of stealthy game that we play?
Well, and I suppose that would be, if it were set up in a way that people, the expectation was that if you were in this fishbowl, anybody walking by is invited.
Exactly.
And that's the difference.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's the difference.
We're entertaining this idea of, you know, what if we start spreading around the House of Genius bulb, if you will, like we have this little logo.
Yeah.
And the same way that you know that a Zagat sticker on a restaurant means that it's been rated in a certain way, that you see this bulb and you know, oh, this is a collaborative space. I can walk up to any conversation or to any sort of event that's happening here, and I could engage and participate and voice. You know.
So if there's the sticker there, it's an open invitation to engage.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I can't promise that it's going to work,
but
it certainly seems like it's worth a try.
Yeah, this is Dave Tabor in Pro Business Colorado speaking with Toma Bedoya of House of Genius. And as you've traveled around the world and you've seen this collaborative approach to doing business, or not even really to doing business, just to sharing ideas and to helping others improve, are you seeing different cultural norms around the world? And how does it, if you're in the Tel Aviv or UAE or in Bangalore, how is it different than what you see in Boulder?
You know, one of the ways it'll stand out is sort of custom. So like in Singapore, some people will stand up before they speak, as opposed to just staying seated at a table. But for the most part, what I found actually is that we all share a common language when it comes around innovation and problem solving, regardless of native tongue or politics or nationality, that we're all very collaborative as human beings. And that actually gives me hope that innovation and entrepreneurship is a steel thread that we can all hold on to come together and work together.
But it seems like the level of formality or the level of protocol would be different. You're saying it's not so much?
You know, like I said, there's a few customs that will show up.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, everybody just likes engaging with each other. We like to feel connected. Mm-hmm. It's not just about connections on Facebook. It's actually, can we sit and talk? Can we play with these ideas like they're Legos? Let's put them together, take them apart.
Hey, when we come back, we'll keep talking with Toma Bedoya of House of Genius. And I want to talk about this whole notion of turning a concept that's sort of a community-based concept into a business. And we'll go there when we come back on Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor right after this.
News Talk 710, KNUS.
Honey, what is that in your CPAP mask?
Oh, that's just my mold collection.
Ew, gross. And what is that?
What, that bacteria colony right there? Yeah, cool, huh?
Okay, CPAP users, admit it. You're not always as careful about cleaning your system as you should be. Unfortunately, a dirty mask and hose can make you sick. Respiratory infections, allergy attacks, and more. But now there's an easy way to protect yourself. SoClean.com has released the world's first and only automated CPAP cleaner and sanitizer. It kills 99.9% of CPAP germs in minutes. For a limited time, you can try it risk-free for 30 days. Just call 1-800-600-4394. SoClean is hands-free. Just pop in your mask, close the lid, and presto, your CPAP comes out clean and fresh in minutes. Don't let germs wreak havoc on your health. Call in the next 10 minutes for your risk-free trial. 1-800-600-4394. That's 1-800-600-4394.
You've been lied to. Lied to by corrupt Washington politicians and the Wall Street propaganda machine. Hi, I'm Inc. magazine best-selling author Brett Kitchen, and I want to give you a free copy of my brand new book, Wealth Beyond Wall Street, because we all know another market crash could be right around the corner. After losing 35% in my IRA in the crash years ago, I said enough, and since then I discovered a way to grow money potentially double digits, reduce taxes dramatically, and also have my money protected when the next stock market crash hits. When the next market crash hits, you lose nothing. Call Wealth Beyond Wall Street now to get your free copy and and talk with a specialist to discover this little-known strategy to get potential double-digit growth during good years and never lose when the next stock market crash hits, all while building a tax-advantaged retirement. Call 1-800-920-8484 to discover this asset that people like Walt Disney and JCPenney use to grow wealthy. Plus, get one of just 97 free books left. We even cover shipping and handling, no credit card required. Call 800-920-8484. 1-800-920-8484. That's 1-800-920-8484.
We now return to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. You can find this show, be available via podcast tomorrow. And you can go to proco360.com. You can go to SoundCloud or iTunes to get it, looking up Pro Business Colorado. But again, proco360.com. And if you go to that website too, you'll be able to sign up to get emails of upcoming guests. And for example, next week I've got John Levesay, the CEO of Craftsy, coming on board. And boy, that's an amazing Colorado-based company. They've raised $106 million, bringing together the best instructors, most passionate enthusiasts, and most inspiring ideas to help creative people everywhere do what they love best, even better things like hobbies and quilting and cake decorating. It's pretty amazing, actually, to look at some of these videos. So the CEO of Craftsy will be on with me next week. This week, though, I'm speaking with my friend Toma Bedoya of House of Genius, and it is fun to call you a friend. We've known each other for a while.
Cheers. Yeah, absolutely, and been enjoying it and excited about where it's going. So, yeah.
Yeah, this House of Genius notion, why don't you give a quick 30-second overview in case someone's just joined us about what House of Genius is. I'm going to talk about it after that. We'll keep going.
Sure. We host monthly events in 36 cities around the world where if you get invited or nominated to come, you come to this event. It's 3 hours in an evening. You're anonymous, first name only. You can't talk about your background. And everyone in the room is held to that. And you dive into not three pitches, but three problems or opportunities that a local innovator or entrepreneur or small business is tackling right now. And you sink your teeth into them as a group, and you get exposed to thought leaders from other parts of the community in other industries and sort of new ways of thinking. And it's a high-yield networking event is what I would call it.
Well, and, you know, one of the things, because people are from such different backgrounds, they may end up maintaining relationships or they may never see each other again. It just depends
absolutely
on the dynamic of the group and who you meet.
Well, it turns out that when you talk to people who are not in your industry, the networking return becomes really high, as opposed to look at all the people we know that are the same because we're in the same industry.
Yeah.
Instead,
but isn't that what we always seek out? I always want to seek out the people who, you know, are sort of in a parallel stream with me.
Yeah, because it's more comfortable. It's more familiar. You feel like you have more to talk about.
Well, and I think the path towards some positive outcome is more easy to see. Come on, let's be, fair.
It's very tribal. We're all very uncomfortable, a little scared, a little nervous when we walk into rooms, whether we admit it or not, when we don't know a lot of people. And so we're looking for familiarity. We're looking for acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't about acceptance. This is about let's get to work.
Yeah. Well, speaking about acceptance, you know, you've got to figure out how to turn this thing that's taken off without a business plan, really. I mean, you just started this thing several years ago in Boulder, like, hey, this would be fun. Mm-hmm. And now it's exploded to a thing or a phenomenon around the world. And you're like, how do I do this, right?
Yeah, can we make a business out of this?
Yeah.
Can it be sustainable? And, you know, there's some low-hanging fruit, like things around sponsorships and partnerships. We're also doing sort of building permit fees for new cities to open, which are helpful. But mm-hmm. we're also expanding into sort of facilitation and playing sort of a bridge role between innovative ideas, small projects and businesses that might be interesting or innovative overlaps with large corporations. So, you know, for example, in London, we're exploring something with Accenture, and whether or not, you know, Accenture's not a sexy name necessarily, but mm-hmm. House of Genius can facilitate a sort of middle ground event.
But they want, like this show, I mean, companies want to be associated with the kinds of people and the ideas that engage, that are engaged through you, right?
No, absolutely. And we're a platform, we're a bridge, and we're a way for corporations that we believe are, you know, could be seen as startups with a few more years under their belt, right? A lot of times they get vilified in a way that's not fair. They are pillars of the community. And they also have innovative challenges, too.
Well, stepping back, thinking back, you did this in Boulder. Mm-hmm. By the way, why do you think starting it in Colorado had some, was it helpful? Did it matter? Could you have started it in Bangalore? Would it be the same?
Well, that's hard to say, but it mattered to me. Colorado means a lot to me personally. I think that we have a chance to be, business and sustainability, what the Valley was to technology. You know, everybody's always trying to be the next Silicon Valley. I think Denver has an opportunity to be the first Denver. I think that we can be where businesses come to show that they can be a sustainable business to their communities, to their environments, to their countries. And so I think Denver has a real amazing chance here, especially with the World Trade Project that's happening, to stand up and say, look, we are about innovation and we, you know, this is where people come to be progressive of mind, but innovative in spirit.
So was there a moment thinking back to when, you know, you had a House of Genius, the first one started, the next one, somebody asked, was there a moment when you said, wow, I gotta turn this into a real thing?
Well, when my funding ran out for a startup, that I was working on outside of House of Genius, and I was looking for what should I do next, and when I noticed that my inbox had requests for House of Genius from cities from all over the world, every country, from governments, at being asked for help for soft diplomacy from the U.S. State Department, for example.
Wow.
And so I was like, there's something here, and let's figure out what that is. And let's scale it. And it turns out that it does scale. You know, House of Genius as a core structure doesn't require a lot.
Yeah.
But it does have a lot of champions and volunteers around the world. So there's certainly that element. But, you know, it turns out entrepreneurship and this renaissance that's sort of happening everywhere, I think it's something bigger than just people getting excited about trying to do a startup.
Well, and it seems like because of what you do, you orchestrate these relationships in ways that people really can't do it themselves. So one of the things I've always wondered, having gone to one and wanting and looking forward to experiencing more, is this notion that, you know, once you've been to one, it's not the kind of thing you do like every day, and you can't pull the group back together to reconvene. You know, everyone is a one-off. So how do you think about that as you build your plan?
Yeah, so, you know, when you come back, we call it, do you want to be recycled? Huh. And when you come back, you're in a room full of 19 new people, and you're looking at three, you know, new problems. And the idea is that it's about engagement and not necessarily permanence. Like, you know, everybody always wants to push for, we should do this again, or we should do this a number of times. And there comes a lot of baggage with that, a lot of overhead. And we don't have that. What we want is we want to be sort of a low ask, a very simple, like, hey, one evening a year if you want, or there can be more. And it becomes a transformative experience that doesn't feel like a burden. It feels like everyone in the room. Like a lot of times we're like, who's the customer?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it the people in the room or is it the entrepreneurs?
Well, you know, and it, to me, as I reflect back again, if somebody wanted to participate in House of Genius, how do they do it? And by the way, I'm speaking with Toma Bedoya, of the founder of House of Genius. So,
yeah, you know, you can go to the website and sort of just apply.
House of Genius.org.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one way to get in the queue. Another way is to get nominated by somebody who's been to an event before. Mm-hmm. And what happens there is, you know, we generally lean on nominations because people who have been to an event will know somebody who would be really good
in that environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's sort of a natural curating crowdsourced vetting that happens for our events, and it makes them, you know, fireworks once they get really mature.
Can you think of an example? We've got a few minutes left. What's a great example of a problem that was solved at a House of Genius event?
Interesting. You know, we did an event in D.C. with Meridian International and with in conjunction with the State Department for a program that we do. It's called MENA. It's the Middle East, North Africa. And they bring over female entrepreneurs in that region. Now, you think entrepreneurship here is difficult. Imagine being a female entrepreneur from that space. There was a young woman who was the first sportscaster from Jordan. And she was receiving death threats on Twitter, and her family was being threatened. And she was really, struggling as a 25-year-old woman. And she came here as a part of this, and the room started talking about that she was an inspiration to a lot of young women who, could they get into sports? Could they get into TV? And so as we went around the room, what happened was we were like, could the covering that she has to wear, for her family and her traditions and religion, did it have to be any certain color? And it didn't. Hmm. And so the idea became, well, let's pick an eccentric pattern or color, you know, much like the pink ribbon for breast cancer, mm-hmm. and that this could become something bigger than just her.
Wow.
And that was something that was really important because it took the focus away from her. And this room of strangers came together. and sort of dove into that. Now, that's not necessarily a direct business example, but it is an example of how the problem
how the group
gets resolved really quickly.
That's very interesting. Now, as you look at turning this into a business model, and you're you and I have talked about this. It's an interesting challenge to go from something that people just want to do as a groundswell to something people want to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you thinking as you go through this process to turn it into a sustainable – because business, people who go to these things don't really want to think of it as a profit-driven entity. They want to think of it as a sustained endeavor, right? It's a different flavor.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so what we're starting to work on is this is it's an event platform, and we want to allow corporations to come. If they want to support it, then they can also participate in it. So that's one way that we look at it. We obviously work with partners and sponsors that certainly help at some level, but we're also looking at, sort of doing a hybrid nonprofit with our current public benefit corp so that we can do sort of that corporate responsibility, that sort of give back on the nonprofit side, while also doing sort of facilitation for large events where we take the DNA of what we're doing and we're expanding it in ways that serve even larger businesses or communities.
You know, it's an interesting challenge. You and I are talking about doing some things collaboratively too. And the idea of, how do you take the essence of something that fits a particular model and adapt it, right, mm-hmm. to something else? And one of the things I noticed about attending a House of Genius is that you leave incredibly enthusiastic. And it'd almost be like, wouldn't it be fun to watch, if I could sponsor other people and then sit in a balcony and just watch them sort of experience what I did, because it's a real revolutionary sort of feel about how does this collaboration actually work.
Yeah, we've actually shifted from event to experience, and it is a transformative experience. And it's funny, you keep pointing out that I've kind of embraced this disruptor idea, disruptor idea. And there's a quote that we all know, right? The only constant is change.
Change, yeah.
Right? And so I feel like this platform is really embracing that thing that we all know, that disruption and change is always there and present. So why don't we get a little bit better about putting a framework around it so that we can, engage.
Benefit from it. And you've been an entrepreneur before this, right? You've had several companies.
That's correct.
What do you think you're learning now at House of Genius that you wish you had known, years ago as you were being an entrepreneur and starting a business?
That's a great question. I think what I've learned is that the human resource part of a business is going to have to shift. The idea that you have to go and find employees and that your problems that are going to be solved, that this needs to be somebody who works in-house and shows up at a desk and sits there all the time, that's not necessarily the case. That actually you can have a problem that has a temporary life in your business solved by people who come and temporarily participate so that there's a collaborative flow.
Do you think that should be part of being built into entrepreneurially minded companies to invite people in to solve problems from the outside?
I think that, when we talk about corporations that struggle to innovate, I think that this is that space where this might be a place to kind of scratch and dig.
That's kind of interesting, the notion, because now when companies want to do something from the outside, big companies just go buy a business, right? Or they have to take a group of like-minded people, employees, and they have to carve them out and put them aside with the old-fashioned skunk works thing.
Yeah.
But maybe what they ought to be doing is inviting ministers, teachers, nurses coming in and doing exactly this under your – that's – we have to talk some more about that.
Yeah, there's technology and the availability of platforms and frameworks is making it so that there's a commoditization process that happens so quick.
Well, we're going to – Toma, it's been great talking with you. Toma Bedoya, House of Genius.
Enjoyed it.
Houseofgenius.org. Find them. Hey, we've got a little left. I want to wrap up today's session. Really appreciate the time speaking with Toma Bedoya of House of Genius. We've been discussing how he created an organization that – really sprouted from an innovative concept in Boulder and then exploded over several years to cities across the U.S., across the world. It's everybody's dream to start a company like that. Find this podcast at proco360.com. Again, proco360.com. Have a great day.